Are you at a crossroads in life with unanswered questions? How does your past connect to your present life? October Hallam can help you discover how your past connects to your present and is shaping your future. October is an intuitive, healer, empath, and medium with over 20 years of experience helping people navigate through some of life's greatest challenges. A recent client from Egypt says, "October is pure magic. We keep coming back for more," and recommended her to our closest friends. If you would like to book a session with October, please contact her at theancientgift222@gmail.com. Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Today, my guest is Jason Quitt. Before we bring him on, a couple of announcements. Starting this Friday through Sunday, we're having the Forbidden Gathering in Fort Collins, Colorado. If you're able, come on over. We're going to be partying, we're going to have outdoor games, guided meditation, hiking, and a live podcast Saturday night. If you want to attend any or all 3 days, email me, forbiddenknowledgenews@gmail.com. Email me to RSVP. It is free to attend, but we only have room for just a few more. So I hope to see some of you guys there. Forbidden Knowledge News is available on Rockfin, Minds, Odyssey, Rumble, and all podcast platforms. Rockfin is where you get all our premium content, as well as all the premium and free content from every creator on Rockfin. Just go to rockfin.com/FKN+ or click that link in the description to sign up. We have started production on the Forbidden documentary. It's going to be epic, and we need your help. If you would like to help by making a donation, you can do so through supportfkn.com, and if you do, you're going to get tons of never-before-seen bonus JFK files and information that is going in Corey Hughes' upcoming book, A Warning from History, about the JFK assassination. Check that out. He's got some juicy morsels on there, some that won't even be able to be put in the book. Our website, forbiddenknowledge.news, it's also the home of the Forbidden Knowledge Network. This is where you find awesome podcasts like Raised by Giants, Ancient Gift, Inception, Understanding Propaganda, Quantum Guide Show, and many more. Today I want to welcome back to the show Jason Quitt. He is a graduate of the Institute of Energy Wellness and a student of Algonquin Shamanism. He has been training and working with many teachers, shamans, and traditional healers from around the world. He is also a channeler of universal and dimensional energies of healing and combines methods and modalities of energy medicine, shamanism, and dowsing to assist those on their own personal paths of healing and enlightenment. Jason, welcome back. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Up in Canada, it's starting to get a little warmer. So I'm happy about that. The spring is finally coming, and hopefully we can get outside and actually enjoy life again.
Right on, man. Yeah, I'm looking forward to spring here in Colorado myself. It's great to have you back. It's been way too long. I think like almost 3 years, and we've got a lot to talk about. And some of the things that I've included in our fun discussion today, astral travel, the nature of multidimensional reality, channeling, and of course your book, Egyptian Postures of Power, which is awesome. I'm sure that'll lead us down some fantastic rabbit holes as well. But since it has been so long, I'd love it if you could remind the audience just a bit about yourself and what led you down the path you're on?
Oh, wow. Well, it's been a long journey. So I'll try to condense it as best as possible. Mm. But basically, growing up as a child, I've had a lot of otherworldly experiences, namely with like ghosts and out-of-body experiences, house haunted, things like that. And then growing up in my early 20s, I started to have out-of-body experiences, which were which I got into through sleep paralysis, which was quite terrifying. To, you know, wake up in the middle of the night, have your body frozen, and then feel presences in the room. And this led to a detachment of the astral body into the astral world. And it was from there that suddenly everything in my life changed. I realized that our world is much different than what I believed it to be. And that kind of sent me down this whole rabbit hole of trying to figure out what is the basis of our reality, who we are, and why is these other worlds hidden from us when there are many people who can experience them, but they're very much demonized, or you're labeled as basically insane if you want to go down that route. And when I started to look into it, not only did I find that cultures from all over the world discuss this, but I don't think there's a time in our human history where it wasn't discussed. In fact, this might be the genesis of religious thought from the beginning. So, you know, in the Western world and with certain religions that downplay this or demonize it or try to snuff it out of existence, it kind of actually pushed me further and further and trying to figure out exactly what had happened to me, what continues to happen to me, and what is the relevance of this spiritual world, because it does interact with us. There is a phenomenon here that is real, and we're kind of switched off to it. And then it shows itself to us when we're ready. Most of us aren't ready, which I find the fun part about this. And it usually scares the crap out of you. But sometimes you need to get scared to realize that there's something much more important that fills in some gaps in our understanding of where we are and who we are.
Yeah, very well said. Go ahead.
And then from there, obviously, I went back to school. So I was working at the time in a recording studio and started having all these experiences, which I just had to get out of that world. And I went back to school for energy medicine. I got into the Qigong and shamanism. And I just tried to study everything I possibly could on the subject. It became like the fire within me. I had to know what was going on.
Well, that is part of what we do here. And this leads me to the first thing I want to talk about. We try to figure out the nature of reality on this show. I've had some amazing guests talk about this, and we've had some pretty far out there theories put out since I've started doing this, and I want to get your thoughts on this. So, are we in a false reality that is managed by multi-generational bloodlines in which we are used for energy or consciousness, and our consciousness is perceiving a holographic existence that we can exit from when we die or astral travel? Or is it a divine learning realm where we incarnate multiple times to achieve enlightenment, consciousness, and spiritual evolution? Or are we on a turtle's back floating through space? What do you think?
You know, there really isn't an answer, because it has to do with the individual's perception of their filtered reality. And that's the beautiful thing about the mental body and mental projections, is that we can convince ourselves of our belief system so strongly that we can manifest what we believe. So if you get someone arguing this side of the room about, you know, this is reality, and someone on this side of the room that this is reality, the truth is it's both reality according to them, and you can't take that away from them unless, you know, you're trying to get into a scientific argument and then saying, well, actually nothing is real. Everything is space, you know, but I do believe that the mental body has been curtailed in a way that we are only meant to see in certain pathways. And once we start to veer off that mental pathway, we get the system tries to bring us back on that pathway. And it gets to the question is, if the mental body, the mental mind has a power onto itself to project reality or to enforce reality, could somebody or a group that knows about the mind and how it operates, can they place their thoughts and ideas into our reality and we manifest it for them? Which I think we see that in politics and how groupthink happens. They can create the agenda through the narratives, and then the people take on that story onto themselves and become that story and become that reality. So in a sense, yes, there are groups of people that create a certain vision for us. Let me go back to, like, if you're familiar with Edgar Cayce and a lot of the old mystics, you know, they talked about how at first when there was mankind on this planet, it was more like an animal. And there was these beings who were not physical, okay, non-corporeal beings, advanced. You could call them spiritual beings or souls. And they did not live in this physical plane. And what they did was they wanted to experience physicality. This is according to Edgar Cayce, by the way, that they projected their mental thought forms from a distance to embody the physical animal of man. And from that perspective, they were able to experience the senses of physicality, eat, hear, see, you know, just be here in all the senses. And these beings became so enamored with physical gratification that they've spent so much time projecting their thoughts, projecting their thought forms into humanity, that it pulled their essence, their soul, into man and them joined. And that's where you get the soul and the body, or the mental mind and the body. They're different parts. And because they were so enamored, again, by, you know, the desires of man and the flesh and all this, that was kind of like their fall from grace, you know, like the biblical fall from Eden. And the more time they spent in physical bodies, the more that they trapped themselves within it, and the more they forgot their spiritual essence. Whereas if you go back to the earlier writings, it talks about how at the beginning point, it was very easy for these beings to leave. So, you know, they would come, they would embody the human form, and they had this spiritual body, the thought projections could easily just move in and out of the physical space. But over time, that ability went away. So the interesting thing I think about this a lot is that when I've had my out-of-body experiences, you do have these two bodies. They're very distinct bodies where you have that full-on separation. It's what people describe in near-death experiences, where you can physically experience the pushing out. So you're actually willing and forcing yourself out of the body. You physically experience seeing the body, and then you realize that you're have another body in some other space that's not physical. And then that body could move in different directions. Now, the thing that's, and remember, I'm thinking about this all the time. I'm trying to put all these pieces together because I'm trying to understand it myself. Basically, when you leave your body and you leave the physical world, it's almost like you enter this platform or stage. I don't know if this is the astral world or a world of the mind, but it's outside of the physical world. It's absolutely outside of it. And in that space, what we know as time, what we know as dimension, no longer exists. So from that stage of the astral world, from that astral body or that vantage point, multiple things can occur. You could either travel, and that means like travel the stars, like you can just fly wherever you want. Portals open up. This is the thing that happens pretty regularly, if not all the time. Portals will open, they'll pull you through, and you'll end up in different places. But then there's this other whole side to this astral travel stuff where it's almost like a mixture between the dream world and the astral world, where you pop in and out of different, I'll call it like lucid dreams, where it's not just a lucid dream. It could be other lifetimes, other scenarios, teachings, or even like parallel universe type things. So you'll like wake up in other bodies, and it's always momentarily. It's not like very long. And as a traveler, I'm always trying to prolong the experience. And it's very difficult to hold on to the experience for a long period of time. And what I find, what determines the extent of the experience is the mind. If my mind as Jason starts going, oh my God, I'm doing it, or I want to go here, I want to do this, the moment my mind kicks in, I get yanked back and wake up in bed. But if I try my best just to silence and be at peace and observe, it's almost like this body has its own conscious mind to it, and it does exactly what it's supposed to do without any guidance or direction from me. It just does its nightly things, and I'm able to observe and take the memory back to the body afterwards. So I think that's a very interesting distinction, that in this out-of-body state, it has something to do also with the dream world. And you can get to the out-of-body state through the dream world. In fact, a lot of when someone has a lucid dream, when they wake up in a dream and they say, okay, I know I'm dreaming now, most people kind of go wild. Like they try to get away with anything, right? Because now they control the dream. But once you wake up in the dream, you can actually switch the mind to pop out. So there's many opportunities where you can use the lucid dream state to actually step out of the body itself and pop yourself out of the dream world entirely. And then you're floating above your bed. And then you can make those other decisions, which actually you can't make those other decisions because that body has a strange consciousness to it. It just does what it wants. Kind of reminds me of Peter Pan chasing his shadow. You can't really control it, but it's you and you know it's there.
Right. And when you said your mind kicks in and you just pop back in, that's the problem that I always have, even initiating it. I'm able to get into deeper states of meditation, but not any type of out of body or astral experience. Same thing with a lot of people I know, they get stuck. It's because their mind kicks in. And is it that you just have to stay in a state of feeling instead of any mental activity, right?
It's It's a world of feeling. Right. And that's even for the leaving the body process. It's what signals you leaving your body is a feeling. And it's when I feel that feeling, then my mind kicks in and goes, oh, okay, my body's ready to do this. You know, it's not the other way around where my mind says, I want to go do this, let's do it. No, it's like, I really think that there is this divine timing aspect to all of this. And it has to do with the stars. It has to do with the magnetic fields. It has to do with the location of the earth. It has to do with the geomagnetic fields of the sun hitting the earth. What planets are in alignment. I think it has to do with all these things. It's like based on your astrology, because think of each planet as like a bell or a resonator. And when you're born, your field is kind of composed of this harmonic resonant of how you were, the energy of the time you were born. You know, where did you come into this world? What was around your first vibration? And the planets move and they may resonate you at different times during your life. So for example, like in my early 20s, this stuff just started popping off. Like there wasn't, from the age of like 23 to about 25, 27, in that range, it was very easy to leave your body. It was like very easy to have spiritual experiences. And then it started to decline. And then it's like, if there's like a full moon, new moon, or eclipse happening, or some astrological thing going on, I've noticed that it does actually enhance or change the direction of what we receive. So in my mind, all of these things are connected fundamentally to the experience. And this is why it can never really be forced. But when it comes back to the mind, I don't think the mind could help the experience other than giving you permission or signal that now is the time to do it. So if I was like asleep or falling asleep, because this is a state that's in between sleeping and dreaming, and you reach a state where suddenly the body falls asleep. And some people will hear like a low hum, and that low hum will get louder. You may feel like a heat or a numbness starting in your stomach area. And that numbness will go throughout your body. It's almost like you're witnessing your own body being put in paralysis. But this is a natural thing that our brain does anyways when we go to sleep. The difference is that for some reason, your mind is awake and aware of the feelings of you dropping down into different states. So there's these altered states that you need to become aware of, because they happen very fast as you're going to sleep. So there's these multiple states between waking and dreaming that most people are not perceptible to. But if you are perceptible to it, there's that one stage where the body starts to turn itself off. And it becomes numb. Now, when that mind stays awake and you realize the body's asleep, that's the time that you kind of project yourself out. And it's not, and this is the weird thing about it, it's not a mental push. Like you're not like in your mind squeezing your mind to get out of your body. Like you can't mentally push yourself out. But the astral body or whatever that other body is within us wakes up. And I think this is the most important thing. And this has to do with like the occult and initiations and rituals and things like that. It's about waking up this sleeping spirit within you. It's like when you're alive, your spirit is dead. Think of it like that. When you're alive, your spirit's dead. And then when you die, suddenly your spirit awakens and it's like your spirit is born again into that world. And what the initiation rites, what all this ritual is what you're trying to do is you're trying to awaken that spirit within you while you as well are also awake. So now you have this dual nature, one that's in the physical world, one which is in the spiritual world, and those two bodies now interact with each other. And it almost feels like there's three bodies, because you have the physical body that's now sleeping in bed. You have the astral body, which kind of has its mind of its own. And then you have your mind that's along for the ride. So there's like you're experiencing three different aspects of yourself in this world. And that's what I find truly fascinating. And I've had multiple experiences in these other worlds where you have more than one perception at a time. What I mean by that is I can be the astral body floating around. I could be the mental body experiencing the astral body floating around. And then what we're looking at or perceiving in that world, I could look through the eyes of people that are walking around. I could feel what other people are feeling. So it's almost like the consciousness is separated in a way where you could have multiple experiences all at once. This kind of multiple mind experience. And, you know, as we know, like the first law of hermetics is, you know, the all is mind. And, you know, we have to, this is the whole thing. It's like, where does spirit fit into this? Or what is consciousness? Is it all just mind of something else projecting itself, creating this reality? Or is it spiritual force? Like, what is this thing we're experiencing? And I think the mystery of this is so deep that all of human history, we've been asking this question and never reaching that understanding. But the more we look, the more we understand who we are a little bit better.
Yeah, it's like unpeeling a never-ending onion that just has layer after layer after layer, and we can't get to the bottom of it. I'd love to hear a couple of your favorite astral experiences.
Now, this is a difficult one because I would say a lot of the experiences are terrifying, but that's what makes them my best experiences.
That's fun. Let's do it.
Okay, so I think the most profound one that has ever happened to me was. It was when you start leaving your body, you get something called visitations by entities. Okay. That's like the first thing that starts to happen. And that's why I always kind of caution people, because it's like when you're getting into the spiritual world, it's not all fun and games. Like, this is your initiation into a greater spiritual understanding and universe. It's not like, you know, happy rainbows and unicorns. It's you got to face your stuff. And I think this is why a lot of people have been held back, is because we can't even face our stuff in real life. How are we going to face it in the spiritual world? But anyways, so at nighttime, I would be visited by beings that I would call very heavy or dark. And obviously, I'm trying to fight them or get them out of there, or clear or heal or, you know, all that stuff. And one night, this thing came into the room, and it was almost like the movies where it's like this darkness kind of just took all the light out of the room, right? It's just this abyss just came right into the room. And when the darkness kind of went over me, it was so heavy and so crushing that I've never felt that before. It was almost like I couldn't breathe. It was crushing my lungs. And, you know, I'm trying to fight back. And it's like, I can't do anything. It's too much. And I thought, okay, this is the end of me. And then I remember a teaching from my from the shaman I worked with. And they said that, you know, when you die, the master goes back into the fire, which is, they said the fire in shamanism is basically creator. It's the great fire of all. And that's what creation is. And they say that within the recesses of the heart, in the chamber of the heart, there's a little fire, a little flame, and that is your piece of creator. That's your divine source. And that the masters, when they die, instead of going out, they go in, right? So they go into the chamber of the heart and merge with the fire. So I thought to myself, okay, well, I guess I'm going to die. So I'm going to go back into the fire. So I went inward. I let go of like complete external, whatever was happening to me. And I just put my single focus on going into the heart, to this fire. And when I found that flame within the heart, the moment my consciousness touched that flame, it was like a nuclear explosion. And fire just exploded out of every part of my body. Like I was literally, it felt like you were just like destroyed by like a nuclear blast of fire. And this fire just shot out of my body in all directions all at once. And my consciousness merged with this fire. And it was like, I was suddenly touching all of existence all at once. It was like the most godlike deity experience I've ever felt ever. And the only thought that I could conjure up in my mind at that time was, now I know what God feels like. Because that was like the feeling, the grandeur of that experience. And whatever was in the room with me, whatever that darkness was in the room with me, was instantly annihilated or dissolved, or I don't know what happened to it, but and then the fire from all that universe, everything that I felt, it just sucked right back into my body, into my heart. And I woke up like, holy shit, like that was the most intense thing I've ever experienced. Till this day, I've never experienced anything to that level of experience.
Wow. Now, when you say entities, this is something that I love exploring. I love talking about. I have had meditation experiences and psychedelic experiences where I've gotten to contact with, now I have an understanding that they're my spirit guides and am able to occasionally have conversations with them if I need to. How is this something that is a part of astral experiences normally? Are you normally drawn to meet your spirit guides or ancestors or guides in these experiences?
It's almost like a lot of the times they initiate it. So it's not really like you saying, I'm going to go meet my spirit guide, or I'm going to go meet my family. You have no clue what's going to happen that night. And then suddenly they're there. And I think that has to do with this kind of reverberation through space of, you know, just the frequency or the energy around you is right. Excuse me. The energy around you is right, where now they can come visit you, or it's now the point in your life. So you get both. And this is the very interesting thing about the astral world, is that it's the same stage. Okay, it's the same place, but you have both negative and positive things to happen to you in that space. So there is still a polarity in these worlds. And when I speak about entities, entities can mean many different things. You can be an entity and have positive intentions. You could be an entity and have negative intentions. Is an entity a soul? Is an entity a ghost? Is an entity a thought form? And it could be all the above. You know, your thoughts could, like, just like a golem, like, excuse me, your thoughts can create manifestations of form in the astral world. And the more energy that you put towards those thoughts, you build them as they are. And I think this is the biggest occult secret there is that our thoughts create the demons and the angels. Mm. You know, yes. So our deities,
like egregores.
Yes. And I didn't know even what that was called, because, you know, I'm experiencing it. I'm trying to figure out what are these things, you know? So for me, they existed before I knew what they were. And now I'm trying to put the words to what they were, but it is absolutely true. And a lot of these thought forms that become form an entity that actually run their own lives or run their own mission, whatever that purpose is, the only way to heal them is to recombine with them. Okay, so let's say you put out this thought and you've created this thing. The only way that thing could end is if you reclaim your original energy back to you, you know, and then it will dissolve and process through you, and you'll have to deal with the good and the bad of that. But I think that's one of the biggest secrets, is that we all create these things, and you don't have to be dead to create these things. A lot of the nasty stuff that I've seen in the astral has been created by people living and breathing right now.
Right on. Now, while we're talking about these astral entities, there has been a lot of crossover, even especially in the past few years, when we're talking about extraterrestrial experiences or contact experiences or even abduction. The lines kind of get blurry a little bit whenever you're talking about these things. I believe there's anyway, to begin with, a profound connection between paranormal experiences and extraterrestrial phenomena at times. But then again, I think there's also a lot of confusion. I want to get your thoughts into these entities and the people that think, you know, that could be possibly communicating with extraterrestrial beings from different planet. For me, I believe that most of the time it's more of a spiritual phenomenon, and maybe possibly not necessarily the little green men coming on tin cans from different planets, but I do want to get your thoughts on that.
Well, first, if you look at the people involved in the space program from the beginning, you will very quickly see that they were all occultists.
Yeah.
All right. So the people running these programs, they know a lot of what we're talking about already. When I first wrote, and I think it's what we talked about last time, but the first book I wrote with Bob Mitchell, which is called Forbidden Knowledge. When I came to him and I said, Bob, I've seen grays. I've seen this species, all described in abductions, all described in classical, you know, literature, sorry. But I saw them fully in the astral state. So I know that this was not a physical experience. And when you hear abduction cases, now I'm not ruling out that there isn't a physical abduction thing going on. What I am saying, though, is that people that have never experiencing leaving their body or having these experiences of the phenomenon, they can be completely out of their body or abducted out of their body, their sleeping body, and they will believe they're physically being taken when their body is still sleeping in bed. And this is why if you put like a camera up in a room of an claimed abductee, they'll say, I was abducted that night. And then you look at the footage and they're in bed sleeping. So they say, oh, you're a liar. You know, like, we don't believe you anymore. What we don't understand is it the mind, astral body? Is that what's being abducted? And because it's the mind and astral body, remember, it is your mind that experiences the senses. Okay. It's your mind putting all that together. Okay. Everything we see, everything we smell, everything we feel is an electrical signal that the mind interprets as your reality. So how would you being in a body or you being in your mind be different to that stimulus? It would be identical because there is no separation between the two. So I would put a high percentage, a very high percentage, I would say like 95% of the cases that we hear about would be from that spiritual side, where 5% could be a physical thing. And then we get into, okay, well, what's the physical thing? Because the physical thing has been around longer than our military. You know, so it's something humanity's always dealt with. So is it something that's from Earth? Is it something that's from our dimension? Is it something from a previous civilization that's evolved way past us and they're hiding from us? Are they from another planet? I don't know. If they want to come visit a zoo, you know, like, I don't see any redeemable quality of coming here.
Yeah, you're right. And I mean, what we've been seeing in the mainstream lately with the pointing to the UAP phenomenon and definitely alluding that it's a physical threat to humanity. Of course, I don't trust anything coming from our mainstream media or government. They have the worst track record of any serial killer that you can imagine. But, the information coming out is very interesting, as well as the timing and everything else surrounding what's going on. Why do you think now that this is becoming, you know, maybe a desire to put into the human consciousness on a mass scale?
Well, I think anything to keep humanity fearful is the goal, because the moment you create fear or panic or have this existential threat, you're immediately taking them out of normal everyday thinking into fight or flight mode. And when you're in that mode, you can be controlled. You don't make good decisions. You can be mind controlled, basically. So when you continually traumatize a population or continually tell them that there's all these fears that are going to kill them, then you're always looking for some authority to take care of you. And that's the secret. But when it comes to like these drones, these UFOs.
Yeah.
I'm going to get shit for that. Are flying around. Could it be technology that humans have created over the past 75 years? Absolutely. I think over 100 years ago, Nikola Tesla invented some things that would completely change our entire world. And that has been suppressed. So if technology that is incredible has been suppressed over 100 years ago, could you imagine what humans, you know, not aliens, but humans have created? Could there have been man-made UFOs created around World War II? Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, so to think it's far out that you can say that there's human technology out there that rivals the laws we understand, I think it would be foolish to think that there is not some type of secret that's not being shared with us. When it comes to actual UFOs, that's a whole other subject, because these ships would have to have quite the technology to fly from stars to stars. I don't even think they would make that journey. I think flying from stars to stars is the dumbest thing anybody's ever proposed. if you want to fly from here to the next galaxy, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of years that would take, going multiple speeds of light speed. You know, so the only way that I can perceive anything flying through space is just like in the astral world, is portals would have to open up and you would jump from point to point. And that would be the only method of travel for these things. But then again, I don't know. A lot of people say they're us from the future.
Yeah, that's interesting. Very interesting.
Maybe it's us, or maybe it's just different timelines of humanity that, you know, sometimes the magnetic fields shift and we get a glimpse of another world in our world momentarily, and the magnetic field shifts again and they're gone. So we may be seeing into another world. We don't know.
Right. Well, you know, while we're talking about, you know, strange shifts and then mass consciousness over the past few years, there is a perceived kind of, you know, great awakening happening where I see it myself. There's a lot more people who are becoming interested in the unseen, interested in hidden truths, spirituality, paranormal, a lot of this stuff. But I'm wondering, was there a trigger for it? Do you think that this is something natural that was always going to happen to humanity? I mean, we've been through some pretty traumatic events as a collective on this planet for the past few years. So could that be one of the triggers that just gets people looking behind the corruption that is on the outside and maybe having some other discoveries? I did notice that aspects of this were happening years before anything happened in 2020 or after that, but that could just be, you know, people in my community. I don't know. What do you think about that?
I think that this has always been around, and it's never really reached that mainstream consensus. I mean, even now when you have like the New York Times articles and, you know, the Pentagon saying that these things are real, you know, it's like the people in the UFO community were like cheering, like, yeah, this is so, we have the truth, we have disclosure. But the real world hasn't changed. The real world doesn't care, really. Nothing has really happened because of it, except maybe some money has been placed in other directions at the Pentagon, which, you know, I always said, I'm always a little cheeky on Twitter. And I think before all this was happening, I said, if the government could find a way to make money off the UFO topic, they're going to find a way, you know, because, and that's the thing, it's like, okay, now there's UFOs. Okay, now there's funding for certain programs. So it's like everything goes hand in hand. I, as a great awakening of people, I think because of the internet, because of the connectivity of so many people, people are able to speak freely, which now they're trying to really clamp down on. But because of this, we have seen through a lot of lies that maybe in previous times, most people would not be able to see. And because of that, people will say, okay, that's fake news. Or, you know, now I can't trust these people anymore because I know what they're saying is false, but they're pushing it. So they have an agenda. So the issue here is that when you dissolve trust in information, when you dissolve trust in society, you're open to believe anything. And that's also an extreme danger. You know, so I think also, are they purposely lying so that people mistrust them? Because then you get people mistrusting everybody. So it's a very slippery slope, and people would believe anything. So
do you see a kind of collapse of an empire and possibly something arising from the ashes within the near future? I mean, I don't see how these old systems are going to be sustainable anymore with everything that's come to light, and I don't see how they continue going forward, you know, especially in places like Canada. You know, I don't see how these systems can continue going and be sustainable for people. Do you see this maybe coming to an end, all these old systems collapsing and maybe something new and better emerging in our future?
Well, that's always what they kind of, that's always the carrot in front of the stick for all societies, is that, especially now when they're talking about the Great Reset, basically they are promising this type of future, which many people don't realize what they're offering.
Yeah, you don't want that.
but you know, the stated goal is you have to basically bring down the old system. The old system has to completely fail for a new system to be brought in. And, you know, they were saying that the COVID disaster was the thing that would be used. And it's not me saying this, it's them saying this.
Right, right, right.
That it was going to be used as the catalyst to just completely shift our society into something else. So, you know, to quote Klaus Schwab, which I'll never do, there's going to be a lot of angry people out there.
Yeah.
You know? So again, it's like, not only do we have to deal with the complexities of life, complexities of daily relationships, complexities of trying to make a living so you could actually live in society, you know, that we have a housing crisis in North America. Like, people are not able to afford anything anymore. So it's now like rent to live, basically. You can't own anything. And on top of that, now we have to deal with a pandemic. We have to deal with collapsing of the world and a war with Russia and Ukraine. Like, how much more can civilization take? You know, if you keep beating up people for so long, there will get a point where you can hand them breadcrumbs and they'll kiss your feet.
Right.
You know, and I hope that's not where we're going. And that's why we have to kind of, again, look inward, because I believe the real truth of who we are, of all of this, how this whole system was even set up, was in that spiritual world, and understanding what is there, what is hidden. Why can't we understand? Why are we not shown these things? Why are we not taught these things? And if we do know them, could we avert these agendas? And I think we can. And that's why this is one of the biggest fears of controlling societies, is to not allow people with a freeing type of mind in a cage society.
Right on. Well, let's end on some lighter notes. For the last few minutes we have, let's talk about your new book, Egyptian Postures of Power. This may actually help people during these times get through them a little easier. What brought you to write the book?
Well, one of the first things that I was told in the out-of-body experiences was I had to heal myself. I had to take this healing journey, and that's why I got into Qigong and shamanism, went back to energy medicine school. And in some of my journeys, I was taken back to Egypt, and I was retaught these postures where I would stand in front of this person that looked like a pharaoh, and they would be standing in different postures, and I knew that I had to copy what they were doing. And when I did that, I felt something open above my head and energy flow through my body very powerfully. And I knew that this was a very ancient, powerful system of attuning yourself to these ancient energies, attuning yourself to who you are, and correcting your energetic fields, correcting the flow of your energetic fields, which help change your perceptions in the world. So you get that stronger groundedness and perceptions of the spiritual world, physical world, emotional world, mental world. And when I started to work with Qigong and work with these systems, it really put me in a direction of healing. It put me in a direction of senses. So my senses became very heightened, feeling. I started to feel things that I've never felt before. And so what I have done is I wrote this book, The Egyptian Postures of Power. And there's a lot of mysticism and occult in here, especially theologies and ancient religions. But I'll just basically show you. So here's like the first posture. So it's based on like the statues. And you just copy the different postures and you start to meditate. So they're just basically standing or sitting meditations in a specific posture. It's the same thing as, let's say, like a meditation that's in a mudra. So you choose the different posture, the different mudra, the different mantra, and you meditate in that to align the energies in a certain way. And from what my research has shown, what the out-of-body experiences have shown me, is that this is a very ancient system of a language between the physical body, the mind, the spirit, and the environment. And it works it all together so you become better accustomed to all the energies that we carry and move. So I'm very, very proud of this book. I've been working on this book for almost 20 years. And I finally put the pieces together in this one. And so this is the level one book, and I'm going to be writing a level two book with different information, hopefully by summer.
Man, that's great. One of the biggest, quote, conspiracies out there is our healthcare system and pharmaceutical industry. The deception that if you go, you have to go to a doctor to be healthy, that you have to take pharmaceuticals or drugs to be healthy or not be sick. When the answer is, first within us, sunlight and eating right. I mean, you follow the, and whatever your spiritual practice is to keep you grounded. But if you follow these basic things in life, there is no need for doctors or pharmaceuticals. And that is the huge illusion to keep this whole industry going. And that's just, for me, one of the things that I've come to see.
Yeah. Well, it shouldn't be called healthcare. It should be called disease care. Because once you get the symptoms and get the disease, then the pharmaceutical industry comes in and says, okay, well, now we're going to
kill you.
Well, I don't think they want to kill you because they want to make profit. So they want to keep you alive as long as possible, as long as you're taking the medication to suppress the symptoms and get on with your life. And I believe everything does have its place. For example, like trauma medicine, like if I break my back, I'm going right to the hospital. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I'm going to take a painkiller.
For sure. Yeah.
There's positive sides to that, but the issue that I find is this whole polarizing factor is only we know the truth, and anything you say is false. And that is what I do not like, because there are multiple routes that you can take naturally to get through what you're getting through. But obviously, if you're in trauma, if there's an actual issue with you, then seeing a doctor can save your life. So we have to kind of find that middle ground balance between those two parties. Absolutely.
Right on. Well, tell everyone if they're interested in finding more about you, your book, where to find it. What's the best way for them to do so?
The easiest way to find my book is through Amazon, and just type in Jason Quitt, Egyptian Postures of Power, and just make sure it's this book with the really cool graphics.
Yes. Love it.
And you can go to my website also, thecrystalsun.com. And you could also follow me on Twitter, Jason_Quitt, and on Facebook, I think just Jason Quitt.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, this has been way too long since we've done this. We're going to have to do this way more often, because we scratched the surface on some of the stuff that I wanted to talk about. So we'll have to definitely do it again.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, till next time, everyone, have an excellent evening, and we will be talking again tomorrow. See you then.